We have at first something which is called Me'ilah. And with the introduction of Me'ilah, let me also make an observation. Some mitzvot, we can call them Ben Adam L'Makom and some Ben Adam L'Chavero. I'm going to use different terminology now, which I don't know if I'm making up or not. I'll say some things are vertical and some are horizontal. And Me'ilah is something which is vertical. There is a Mishkan, there is a Beit HaMikdash, and somebody makes a misappropriation from something which belongs to above, therefore, Lem'ol Ma'al B'Hashem, there are consequences. So I said that's the first one. Now, if we were to consider the second one, before we actually look at it, as I said, sometimes there's verbal or linguistic issues. Before we look at the second one is going to have to do with the Parsha of Sota. Matter of fact, I'll even tell you the four that I'm interested in, and that come one after another. One is Me'ilah, the other is Sota, the other is Nazir, Birkat Kohanim, and then we move towards the Nisiyim who start to bring their offerings. And when it comes to each one of these, I need to ask myself, which ones are part of the organic story? And the answer is the Nisiyim. That's part of the organic story. That's what happens at this point. We get to year number two. We get to Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And now that's what happens. But why are these other laws taught at this point? Which means Me'ilah could have been taught at various places in Vayikra. Sota would have fit very nicely in Parsha Ki Teitzeh. You have all kinds of marriage and mishaps that take place in Ki Teitzeh. Nazir, okay, maybe that someplace when we spoke about vows, maybe even Erechin or other things, there were various vows that you could have stuck Nazir in as well. And finally, Birkat Kohanim, I have a better place for that also, but I'm going to hold off on that for the moment. But when we look at the laws, so far you have Me'ilah, and we should be somewhat puzzled, why is that here? Why is that law being put at this particular point? And then when we get to Nazir, sorry, we get to Sota, Pasuk Yud Aleph, V'Deber Hashem Moshe Leimo, Deber B'nei Yisrael, V'Marta Aleihem, Ish Ish Ki Tisteh Ishto, U'Ma'ala Bo Ma'al. And now you, of course, need to notice that the terminology, Me'ilah, is being used over here as well. And that is really interesting. Because I could have said, maybe even I should have said, that the problem of infidelity, maybe it's almost exclusively, maybe exclusively, it would be what we would call a bin Adam l'chaveiro, that the marriage has been affected or it's cheating on the husband. Just think about what we use in our modern terminology, that he cheated on her, she cheated on him. So it's cheating on the spouse. I mean, one could also have said something else, that it's a sin against God. Now, this is really interesting that this, well, the cheating, this is not yet the sota, the suspected situation, but the cheating is called Me'ilah. Okay, here you go. Here's the Sheva Brachos Dvar Torah that no one's ever going to use, and that is that marriage is called Kiddushin. And if it's called Kiddushin, what happens when somebody makes a misappropriation in something which is holy? It's called Me'ilah. Now, that should not sound like a huge chiddush, but that's actually what is suggested by using the word Me'ilah over here. So I'm going to say it again. If one wants to go and search through various places, you can look in the Rambam some places, is the mitzvah, or not the mitzvah, is the sin, when it's involved in arayot, is it essentially a bein adam l'chaveiro or bein adam l'makom? Again, is it horizontal? Is it vertical? I think that we would be a little bit surprised what the answer is, but I will tell you over here, by using the word me'ilah, right, that immediately suggests to us that what we're dealing with over here is something which is bein adam l'makom, and that may be somewhat surprising. Now, the other things which may be surprising about this is, let's read a little bit more what we have. One is we have what's called this ruach kin'ah, that jealousy. So jealousy is something we're going to stay with. The phrase ruach kin'ah v'kineh is going to come up various times, multiple times over here. We're told that this woman is going to need to bring an offering which is out of barley, and that's somewhat of an outlier in terms of korbanot, bringing barley, and that itself should catch our attention. But there's a larger issue that we need to pay attention to, and this should give us a bit of a hint as to what we're dealing with. If the situation of a sota were really something which was ben adam l'chaveiro, when it was really a crime in a classic sense, and maybe I'm overstating this, then the place of adjudication should be a courtroom. But if you're dealing with a misappropriation of something which is holy, then it takes place someplace else. And again, but you'll tell me, well, what about Me'ilah? Where does that happen? But I understand the question, and I'm nonetheless going to exaggerate this point, that it's fascinating that the place of adjudication is not the Beit Din, it is the temple. Instead of the elder, the Dayan, the rabbi dealing with it, it is the Kohen. So that itself should be telling us something. Furthermore, aside from the barley offering, there's something else which is quite suggestive in terms of, again, what exactly it's doing over here. And let's take a look. And that is the continuation of the process to take min ha'afar, asher yer bekarka ha'mishkan, and you put water with this dirt, dust, earth that was by the floor of the Mishkan of the Beit HaMikdash, and then you're going to put this parsha in as well, and therefore the name of God will be erased and she will drink this. So let's pause for a moment and just speak about this again and maybe get back to the barley. There is one situation where infidelity actually takes place. A sota is a situation where the husband has jealousy, and he can have jealousy for good reasons or for very poor reasons, but he has jealousy. He then warns his wife not to be secluded with a particular individual, and now here is where she gets responsibility. She then goes and is secluded with this individual. She goes, checks into a hotel room. Now, let's be honest. We have no idea what happened behind the closed doors. For all we know, they were sitting and learning Mesilas Yesharim together. Right? We have no idea what was happening behind closed doors. But the problem over here, it's not that there was infidelity, it's that there's jealousy, which is now fueled by poor choices. It's this process now, which is dealt with by the Kohen, and ultimately what the Kohen is trying to do is to bring about peace between them, because that's what Kohens or Kohanim do. They bring about peace. So now she'll go through this whole process, and there's one more element which I didn't mention. Her hair will become uncovered, disheveled, and so on, and that should be also perceived as something which is disturbing. And then, after all this happens, you know, the default in life is that then you just continue with life. Something miraculous has to happen for her then to be punished or to die. A miracle has to happen. That this concoction has to be toxic and has to go and kill her. If the Gemara tells us, if she has merit, it won't necessarily happen. On the other hand, if he has guilt, then it won't necessarily happen. If he has guilt in terms of sexual sins, then the miracle is not going to happen in order to help. But I'll say it again, the default is that she passed the test, and therefore the marriage is able to continue. And I'll put it this way, the odds of her surviving is actually stacked in her favor because of the other various criteria involved in this. And what this is a way of helping people get past, again, this jealousy, poor decisions. Now, going back to the poor decision, sometimes is based upon following instinct instead of intellect, so therefore it becomes interesting, and this I'm really echoing Chazal now, when they say that the barley is animal feed, and therefore she acts instinctually like an animal rather than using intellect, and that's why the barley becomes something which is appropriate. We move from this over to the Nazir. And the Nazir is something which is interesting because, you know, and we've discussed this before, anybody who's heard me talk about this, the Nazir is a wannabe Kohen. So therefore, he can't come in contact with the dead like a Kohen. He can't drink wine like a Kohen during service. On the other hand, his hair grows unlike a Kohen because a Kohen, in service certainly, has to have the hair kept. So therefore, he's like a Kohen in service, but not like a Kohen. It's also interesting to wonder out loud about the connection between the hair and the hair. A moment ago, we talked about the woman's hair being uncovered and disheveled, and now his hair is disheveled or growing long, and that is something which should at least be interesting. So again, we move from Mi'ilah to a second type of Mi'ilah, to somebody who wants to take more holiness, and now, okay, here's the avenue, here's the way that you take more holiness by the Nazir. And then the fourth category here is the Birkat Kohanim, which means the Nazir ultimately isn't a Kohen. And what does a Kohen do? The Kohen does bless the people, and the Kohen blesses the people using actually the name of God. That's the way it was done in the Mikdash. And therefore, and ultimately, what does he do? The bracha is a bracha for peace, where he tries to bring some kind of holiness down below. I do want to note the at least half of a phrase of the Ramban when he talks about the job of the Kohen. He writes, source number 3, V'tami v'recha sham v'shmercha al derech ha'met ki ha'bracha milamala, which should not be interesting at all, other than the fact that prior to this, we had Mi'ilah and again Mi'ilah, and he sees this also as being something which is vertical and something which is coming down from above. And as I said, that should be interesting. Now, when I asked before, so where could we have put the Birchat Kohanim? Well, I have actually a very good place for it and a very simple place to put it. And it's actually so good that it's not just that the Birchat Kohanim should be there. It's a little bit deeper than that. The Birkat Kohanim is there in another place. I know I'm getting into an area now that is debatable, but we're staying on one side of the debate. Because we have another section, and that is back in source number 4, Shmini Perek Tet, Pasuk Kaf Bet, where it says, Vayisa Aaron et Yadav el Ha'am Vayivarchem. There's Birkat Kohanim. There's a bracha of a Kohen. So, for me to say there's another place you could have put it, yes. You could have put the section that God says, and then, and he actually does it. Which means Birkat Kohanim actually is written prior to Birkat Kohanim. Now, why is this so interesting? So I'll tell you why it's so interesting. First of all, right in the same section, there's also happens to be a little discussion of wine. Where's discussion of wine? Right after Nadav and Avihu. We're told, okay, not to drink wine, which is interesting in terms of now this Nazir. Why else is this interesting? Well, it's interesting because Nadav and Avihu actually try to get more holiness than they should. Again, the Nazir is how you get more holiness. Nadav and Avihu try to act like a Kohen Gadol, perhaps by taking the Ketoret and going inside. But the reason why it's really interesting is that the Korban, which is brought by Nachshon on that day, is actually mentioned in the same section. I mean, you have to work a little bit harder and to understand it, but that Korban is brought as well on that day, because it's the same day. You know, we've done this before. You know this already. That Parshat Shmini and Parshat Naso, it's the same day. So therefore, in order to really properly understand Naso, you need to appreciate that Naso and Shmini are really overlaid one another in a certain sense and communicating some very, very similar ideas. And yes, easily something which is written in one section could have been in the other. And it is very deliberate when the separation over here takes place. So I want to say this again, that the Nazir trying to achieve more holiness should absolutely be understood within the context of Nadav and Avihu, who would try to do something that they were not asked to do. The idea of Me'ilah should be understood within Nadav and Avihu, who then try to serve God in a way that they were not necessarily supposed to do it, and they did this for their own concerns. The idea of the drinking is found over here. The korban, which are brought on that day of the consecration, goes back, which means the connection. By the way, the only thing I may have missed over here now, you realize, is the sota, which is also a type of Me'ilah. But, of course, there's a connection between these elements. Okay, so now let's pause and go back to sota, and that's going to help us then move forward and get to all the other things that we do want to get to. The core of the sota problem was jealousy. Of course, there's two possibilities. One is that the jealousy was absolutely uncalled for, and the other possibility is that the jealousy was absolutely called for. So that's really hard to say. So now when we ask ourselves the obvious question, where does jealousy rear its head the very first time? So I'll speak midrashically for a moment, and the first time we can go back to is between the sun and the moon, where we have competition between the sun and the moon, and they ended up giving different realms. and the moon was caused to shrink. But that's the first time that you find jealousy. Incidentally, we have now Parshat Nassau, which is a Shabbat, and then we move into Shavuot, which is a Chag. The Shabbatot are based upon the sun, while the holidays are based upon the moon, even though the moon, which we're concerned with for Shavuot, actually was one which appeared a long time ago by Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and then we counted days, 50 days along the way, but still it's very much holidays or moon-oriented. But as I said, that's more of a Midrashic understanding. Let's, however, look for another place where we find jealousy. And the other place will be, actually, I'll pause. There's two places coming up, which may or not be interconnected. But even though I paused, I'll tell you what they are. But I do want to make one stop first. But the places where we'll find them is later on by the Nachash, who has some kind of jealousy. And Chazal bring this out. And the other one will go on, obviously, by Cain. But before we get there, there is, as I said, another stop along the way. And that is something which should, again, in the most surprising place, remind us of Sota, and we won't be able, once you see this, you won't be able to unsee it. But before you see it, you won't know that it's there. So again, let's take a look. In source number 6, which is Perek Bet, we're told about the formation of man. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim et Adam afar min adama. Now right there, it's interesting in terms of the Sota, that part of what we take is the afar, and here you have man is afar min adama. You know, later on, when Adam is going to be punished, he's going to be told, El Adama ki, right? Ad Shufcha El Adama ki mimena lokachta, ki afar ata ve'el afar tashuv. So this element of afar being used as being a part of man, but it's interesting, which part of man is it? It's this physical part of man is the afar. Okay, so hold on to that for a second, because what does the pasuk say? God takes the afar min adama, yipach batav nishmat chayim, and then gives it a spiritual element as well. Good. You look at Rashi. Rashi says, Afar min adama, and he gives us two interpretations. One is he gathered it from all places on the earth, Davar Acher. And the second line it says, Natal afro mimakom shenema bo mizbach adama ta'asali. So now he just now moved to holy adama. Now, if that wasn't good enough, this is the part which I think is almost undeniable, is the Targum Yonatan. He says, the Aramaic says, take afra mi atar beit mikdasha. That the afar that should be taken should be the afar from the beit hamikdash. By the way, just for good measure, you can look at the Hebrew, the Keter Yonatan, v'kach afar mikom beit hamikdash, umir abat ruchot ha'olam, v'yiblul mikol meimei ha'olam. And he mixed it with water. Where did water come from? Water was not in the pasuk. So here you have Adam being made by the dirt of the Beit HaMikdash together with water, and then to breathe in something which is holy, which means that is the recipe for what's being used by the Sota. It is the water, and it's the earth from the Beit HaMikdash, and then it's the name of God being used over here. So I hope you noticed this. Maybe you didn't notice this, but once you read this Targum Yonatan, and yes, I'm reading into it, but I think I'm reading into it correctly, and that becomes so much more interesting as far as what this process of which is being done. Okay, now we can move over to our Nachash. The Nachash, we're told, causes her to sin, causes them to sin. But let's move over to Rashi. Rashi in source number 12 on this pasuk, Nachash Arum, or right before that, it says, Vayushneim Arumim, Adam v'ishto v'loid boshishu. The Nachash Haya Arum is a very interesting term following the previous term. We're not sure what to do with it. Rashi in source 12 says, Vayushneim Arum, So essentially, you have a married couple, and here you have the Nachash wants to slither in, and he wants to replace the man over here. That means his motivation is one of kin'ah, but it's one of kin'ah where he wants to do something which, as far as we're concerned, is going to be considered to be me'ilah. Although, note something else, when he causes them to eat from the fruit that they're not allowed to eat from, that's also me'ilah. They're taking something which is from the Garden of Eden, which doesn't belong to them. You know, I can actually quote the Gemara that says that anybody who eats in this world without a bracha is guilty of mi'ilah. But over here, this action of mi'ilah seems to be far more interesting in terms of, again, this echo of nazir and mi'ilah, sorry, of mi'ilah and of sota. As I said, it's interesting. He then, what happens to the Nachash, his punishment is that he has to eat from the earth, but there's no God's name, there's nothing else over here. So therefore, this division, you know, between the earth and the water and the name of God, he just gets the earth, he just gets this physical, he's only interested in the physical. Many times I've called the Nachash a phallic symbol. I mean, the Nachash becomes a Nachash, he loses his legs, and presumably he loses ability to speak. Beforehand, he seems to be something else, and he becomes... there's devolution that takes place over here in terms of the Nachash. Moving over then to Cain. Okay? Source 13. Vadam yadat chava ishto, vatar vatelet at Cain. Vatome kiniti ishet Hashem. So first of all, she calls him Cain, and she talks about an acquisition. And the name Cain, Cain, is connected to acquisition. But she talks about making an acquisition with God, which itself is a little strange, but she's using her child in order to try to fix the relationship with God, and using your child in any way is not advisable, and we will be surprised if this works out okay. Later on, there'll be another child born in Hevel, and we're told that one is a shepherd and one works the land. And again, we've done these kinds of things before, but we note that Cain is a man of acquisitions, and therefore he's called acquisition, and he makes acquisitions. The biggest difference between the person who is the farmer and the person who is the shepherd is that the farmer needs to delineate and claim ownership over land. And Cain, kaniti, acquisition, he needs ownership over land to plant in a particular place, while the shepherd will tend to be nomadic and just go any place. And that suits him, which means there's no ownership over there. So they're on a collision course, and it's not going to work out well. I mean, essentially, if the deterioration of America, I'll say that one is a Democrat, the other's a Republican, and they can't possibly work out their differences, which is why it's all going to crash and burn. And I'm not taking sides, by the way. I'm just watching from the side. It must be fascinating to see the end of the empire. So I'm just really... interested as this is taking place. And but you see right over here that they're on this crash course, and then Cain does something, but he does something in a way which is perceived to be quite imperfect. So again, let's take a look at what he does. Because on the one hand, what he does sounds wonderful. First of all, Pasuk Gimel starts in source 13, Vayimi Ketz Yamim. Of course, we like to know, what does it mean at the end of days? How many days? What kind of time period? When are we starting? When are we ending? He brings from the things growing an offering to God. Now, we don't know at this point if it's good or bad, although it sounds good. Bringing something to God sounds good. On the other hand, Cain is kiniti ishet Hashem. Is he doing this because his mother kind of instilled within him that this is on the checklist or the bucket list? This is one of the things you need to do. Or is this his own spiritual genius? But he brings an offering to God. But when we read about the offering of Hevel, it's at that point we realize that something is wrong. The Hevel Ivigam Hu, Mibachorot Sono, Umichel Vehem. He brings from the first, from the flock, and from the choicest. And it therefore shouldn't be a surprise, Vayesh Hashemet El Hevel Vimchato. Now, what should Cain have done? This is not a big stretch, it's not a big jump. He should also have brought from the first fruits. He should have brought Bikurim. He should have brought the first fruit. And by the way, had he brought the first fruit, it would have served as some type of a tikkun, of some kind of a fixing, for that first fruit that was taken in an inappropriate manner in terms of Me'ilah, where Adam and Eve sinned with the first fruit. He should be bringing the first fruit as an offering, which means the fact that the term first is used by the offering of Hevel emphasizes the silence regarding the first, regarding the offering of Cain, and that's what catches our attention. Once we see all this or understand all this, we're able then to, I think, appreciate a bit more which is taking place midrashically. But before we do that, let's just see a couple of more things. He is not happy. God accepts the offering of Hevel. God doesn't accept, and he is quite upset. Vayom Hashem al Kain, lama charalach, v'lama naflu panecha, halo im teitiv sa'et. If you improve, you can lift up. Question is, what exactly does this mean? The other question that we need to ask ourselves is, what exactly is at stake over here? So I'm going to say something which is not all that obvious to you, but I need to finally get back to where we begin. Part of what's at stake is who's going to be the Kohen. So we have a Kohen competition. In the Kohen competition, Hevel wins, Kain loses. The question is, who's the Kohen? And now you know who the Kohen is. Kain is not the Kohen. Why? Because God doesn't accept it. But God tells him that you could do it. So that's really interesting. Instead of looking at himself or looking inwardly for the problems that take place, instead he looks outwardly, right? Instead of vertically, this now becomes horizontal. He looks at his brother and he blames him. Again, instead of him improving his vertical relationship with God, he looks at his brother and Vayomakain el Hevel Achiv, Vihibatom Bisadevi, come Haim Hevel Achiv, Vyargeun, he kills him. Vayomar Shemakain, E Hevel Achicha, where is he? Vayomalayadati, Shemar Achi Anochi, am I responsible? And of course he's responsible. By the way, the days leading up to Chag HaBikurim is when we get to Har Sinai. We get to Har Sinai like a Ishachad Belevachad. There's supposed to be unity. Over here, we have no unity. We have no Bikurim. It's, you know, this is certainly has nothing to do with Shavuot. Let's put it that way. There is no Shavuot over here. It's quite the opposite. And God says, "Kol de ma'asita, kol de me'echichot zokim alai el adam min adama, v'ata arurata min adama, asher patzta et piha." Right, you're cursed from the land, the earth, which has opened up its mouth. Now that's very interesting, and we're getting way ahead of ourselves. But that phrase patzta et piha is used in another place, in another context, and obviously we're going to need to go there. But first, we're going to take a midrashic stop or pause. And the Midrash is going to tell us a couple of things. So let's look at source 21. And once we read it, we're going to go back and figure out where they got it from. V'hi miketz yamim. Right? That was one of the questions we raised. Rabbi Lezer of Yeshua. Rabbi Lezer, Oma B'tishrei Niver Olam. Yeshua, Oma B'nisan Niver Olam. Now that's a machloket we're familiar with. And we say, what is it doing over here? Manda, Oma B'tishrei Niver Olam. Asa Hevel Kayim Min Hachag V'Ad Chanukah. Hevel was only alive between. Now you're going to say, "What are you talking about? He's 50 days old during this whole thing." You'll see where I get to 50 in a moment. Well, he was raised from parents who lived in the Garden of Eden and never ate preservatives, and therefore he lived was very mature and lived whatever. Manda Amar Menisa Nivra Olam Asa Hevel Kayim Min HaPesach V'Ad HaTzeret. Now that should be really interesting to you, because look what the Midrash just did. Keitz Hayamim is from Pesach Tatzeret. Bein L'Divrei Elu, Bein L'Divrei Elu, a kol modim. Everyone agrees. Shelo Asa Hevel Ba'olam Yoter Mi'chamishim Yom. He lived for 50 days. Which 50 days? So we see one of the opinions on Pesach to Shavuot. If he lived Pesach to Shavuot, then what offering should have he had brought? He should have brought Bikurim. Now, I hope you understand that. By the way, he also could have brought the Shtei Alechem, which is exactly connected to the curse, right? And from the ground, you're going to bring up the Lechem. He should have brought the Shtei Alechem, and he should have brought the Bikurim. And now you ask yourself, where in the world did the Midrash get this from? Well, it sees the failure of Hevel in comparison to Kain. Kain brings from the first. He doesn't bring from the first. And therefore, the Midrash, again, remarkably, if you will, sees the background over here of all of this as being it's a Shavuot story. And I know that all of you are quite surprised that somehow I got to Shavuot and I got it in over here. But look at that. It was staring at us. Now, some of the other elements from Parsha Naso are suddenly going to appear as well, and let's now take a look at that. So continuing in the Midrash, Siman Hei says that he brings the worst. Why? Because Hevel brings the best, so it's that comparison. Siman Vav says that God says, "Amalo im teitiv se'et, you can succeed, you can be lifted up." What does se'et mean? Bracha. You could become a Kohen. So now I'll say it again. You thought I was exaggerating before when I said that the contest over here is ultimately who is going to become a Kohen, who is the real Kohen. And look at this. God is saying to Kain, you can become the Kohen. You could do Birkat Kohenim, but lo and behold, Birkat Kohenim now suddenly appeared as well. And now I hope that I got you a little bit more interested. Also, the question question in Siman Zayin is, where is the Beit HaMikdash going to be built? Will it be built in my part or your part? So again, now you realize the question is, who's the Kohen and who's going to end up having this holiness there? One more thing. At the end of Siman Zayin, we have another theme introduced. Amar Rav Huna, Va'al Mahayu Midainim. What were they arguing about? Amar Rav Huna, Ta'oma Yiteira Noda Im Hevel. Hevel was born with two twin sisters. Zeh Omer Ani Notla Shani Bechor, V'zeh Omer Ani Notla Shanolda Imi. Mitoch Kach V'yakam Kayim. So the Midrash is saying, well, I don't know if you ever worried about this, but how was the world sustained? Right, you have two people, Adam and Eve, and then you have two kids who both happen to be male. Now, how do you continue? So the Midrash says is that there were actually seven people in that family initially, right away, and Cain is born with one twin sister, and Hevel's born with two. And that is where the jealousy comes from, which is great. Because what did the Midrash just now do? Kin'ah, what is the kin'ah based on? It's based upon women, and we always go back to jealousy in terms of women. And that becomes another part of the subtext over here within the Cain and Hevel story. Now, where's the next stop for us to take? Because now we're on a path, and where's the next stop? Where does this emerge again? Now, you all should know where I'm going, because I've given you enough hints along the way. But even if you didn't understand, you don't know yet where we're going, I'll tell you where the next stop is. The next stop is when we have the same story all over again. And that's the beginning of Sefer Shemot, where instead of somebody walking out of their house and not feeling any kind of sense of brotherhood, somebody walks out of the house and feels a sense of brotherhood. Of course, who is that? That's Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe walks out. And by the way, the coming out of Moshe is interesting because Moshe is born Zayin Adar, so we know that when he's born, he said that they hide him for 3 months, and then Moshe gets revealed 3 months later, which is by the holiday of Shavuot. That's the revelation of Moshe by Shavuot. So now again, Moshe gets hidden in the palace. Now Moshe comes out of the palace. I don't know what day it is, but I just now connected it to Shavuot because I can do Hasidic Rebbe Torah as well. And therefore I can say that is exactly the theme. But over here, Moshe feels brotherhood. So when do we feel a brotherhood, right? Had we come to Har Sinai and not receive the Torah, it would have been Dayenu. Why? Because by Har Sinai, we ke'ish echad b'lev echad. That's the time of unity. Who's the one who senses unity? Over here, Moshe senses the unity. So Moshe before Matan Torah is still Moshe because Moshe senses the unity over here. And I hope that all of that now makes a little bit more sense. So Moshe sees an Egyptian beating one of his brothers, and Moshe gets involved and kills the Egyptian. Rashi's going to tell us, how does he kill him? He kills him in the Shema Forish. We'll see the Rashi perhaps in a moment. And then the next day, the two of them come out again, and Moshe, and they're fighting with one another, and Moshe tries to stop them, and they say, you know, who are you? Who put you in charge? Now, once again, the Midrash gives us a subtext to all of this. Let's go back inside and see some of the things that we missed. So we're in source 15, Moshe kills him and he buries him in the hole, him in the earth, which maybe is interesting. Pasuk Yudalad, Bayomer, Misamcha le'ish sar v'shofayt eleinu. Who put you in charge? Okay, well, later on someone's going to say the same thing. Shnei anashim ivrim, now we already get the hint, datan v'aviran. They make all the trouble. Harlargeni ata omer mikan anulomdim shehargu b'shem mefurish. Ata omer, he killed by speaking with the shem mefurish. Now, source 16 is the Midrash, which explains the backdrop of all of this. This is actually the Midrash that talks about the Jews are saved because they didn't change various things. It's not all the things that we always remember. It says arba dvarim, and one of them, they didn't change their names, and so on and so forth. Which is one of them, that they kept the relationships pure. So it says, because there was only one case, and the Torah tells us about it. Now, if you don't remember who Shlomit Badivri is, we actually did something interesting in the last, whatever, half an hour. In terms of Vayikra, there were two narratives. One narrative was Nadav and Aviyu, and we got to that. And now the other narrative is the narrative of the Mekalel, and now we just now got to him. And what's interesting about Mekalel is that Moshe just killed, we don't know why, we don't know this yet, but Moshe just now killed the Mekalel's father, the Egyptian, who, right, he's a Ben Mitzri, he just killed the Egyptian, right? How did he kill him? With the Shema Mefurish. What does the Mitzri do? What does this Mekalel do? He curses with the Shema Mefurish. Along the way, we actually saw when the Shema Mefurish should be used. It should be used in order to create peace. By the way, sometimes you do have to kill for peace. That's not an easy thing for some people. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu does. He protects people. But the job of the Kohen is to bring peace, and the job of the Kohen is to use the Birchat Kohanim. So it's very interesting, that part of the puzzle. But now let's continue in the Midrash and see what the Midrash tells us. It says that Pamacharia halach no ges mitzri, etzel shoter Yisrael, v'natani dev bishto, shetayifat toar belimum, amad lishat kriyat gegever votziu mi beto. So this is consent given under false pretenses, and therefore this does amount to rape. And so here actually we have a case of sota, of jealousy, of me'ilah, any one of these that you want to call. And that is, according to the Midrash, the background of the fight. Once again, fighting because of a woman, fighting. There is jealousy over here, and Moshe understands what's going on. And Vaya Moshe ro'eh oto mabitbo urabu ruach kodesh masha sababayit. And he also sees what he later wants to do to kill him. V'lo od el shaba al ishto shel Datan. Okay, now you realize that Datan is actually the husband of this person who's of this woman, and she is Shlomo Padivri, right from Dan, and it's the wife of Datan. Okay, so by now all of you should know that the place we're going is obviously to Parshat Korach, and the story of Korach and Datan Aviron and so on. The source 17, and I could have done this from many places, it points out that Korach is Ki Korach Haya bo ruach shel kayin, that Korach comes from this negative side. Ubo ruach kinah lehitkanot b'Moshe, shehu mitzad hevel, that Moshe comes from, is like hevel, and kayin, which it's connecting the name actually of kayin to kinah. The other one who does that previously, that I think that we had, the Shem Shmuel is probably worthwhile reading, but we're not going to get to it. The other one should be, let's say, the Shloha Kadosh in source 22. And notice what it's doing. It's connecting the name Kayim, which is really acquisition, with Kin'ah, which really means jealousy. You know, once you make acquisitions, then you become possessive. You become possessive, and then things should be yours. Things aren't yours. Then the jealousy comes in. I'm not at all telling you that the name, that the idea of possessions is connected to that word of jealousy, but the Kabbalists do think it is. So as we now move over to Parshat Korach, let's notice the obvious things. One is, we have a bunch of people who want to become a Kohen, which takes us back to the Nadav and Vihu theme. How were they killed? We pull the old Nadav and Vihu trick on them. Oh, you want to be a Kohen? Sure. Why don't you try to do that Torah trick and see how that works out? Well, I don't want to ruin the story for you because we're not up to Parshat Korach yet, but it doesn't work out very well. But you can't help but realize now that this theme is staring there right at you, this theme coming from, and I'll say it again, Nusso and Shmini are connected, but this is coming from that side of it in terms of the Torah. The other thing, which now also should become of no surprise to us whatsoever, is that something else happens here along the way. Of all the things in the world, Moshe prays that, you know, to not accept their prayers, which is also interesting, and Moshe prays that God should punish them by opening up the earth and swallow them, which goes right out of the Cain and Hevel story. The same terminology is used, which now you understand why the Kabbalists understood that there is in fact a connection between Cain and between Korach, because it is that, it is, again, now we see it's the jealousy, it is who's really going to be the Kohen. Maybe we've missed that along the way. Who is the real Kohen is part of this, and Korach is not the real Kohen, and Cain is not the real Kohen, because he couldn't succeed in doing this properly. On the other hand, the earth opening up its mouth, so now we need payback time for that, and the earth is going to open up its mouth and swallow Korach and his henchmen. So if we continue now a little bit more, there's one more theme, which, you know, we're still missing over here, and let's fill it in, because the Medrash does it, and the Medrash is the Medrash about On. On is the missing protagonist, because in the beginning we had Korach and Datan and Aviron, and then On ben Pelet. So all of us are wondering, wow, what in the world happened to On ben Pelet? Well, what happens? Well, he disappears. Lama nikra shmo On shekol yomav ba'aninut. The rest of his life he was in mourning. Ben Pelet, ben shenasu pla'ot. Miracles happen for him. Amar Rav, on ben pelet ishto et salto. By the way, remember, Rav is one of these fellows in the Gemara, one of the Amorim, who were told that he had a very difficult relationship with his wife. Who saved On? His wife saved him. V'amrulei, and she said, ma lach bahadi plukte. Like many women who will live subsequently, she'll say, I'm ad-libbing a little bit. She said, On, you're an idiot. What do you have in this fight? I Aaron kahana rabba atamida. If Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, you're a follower. Im Korach kahana rabba atamida. If Korach is in charge, you're a follower. You have nothing to win over here. Amrle yadana kule knishta kadisha dichtiv be kol ki kola eda kulam kadoshim. Everybody's holy. But by the way, realize now that the claim of Korach that everyone is holy goes back to Parshat Naso in terms of holiness. Taking holiness, misappropriation of holiness. We go back to the question of Me'ila and Sota and Nazir and the Birkat Kohanim, which means holiness, again, this what I called along the way, this vertical, bring holiness down, connecting to holiness, and everybody's holy, which is not necessarily true. What did she do? Ma'avda ashkite chamra. She gets him drunk. Now, that should be very interesting because we find wine in the story. That's not an accident. What does she do next? We're told that she goes to the door. He uvarta v'sitra l'mazeh, and then she undoes her hair, which is an incredibly reminiscent of the sota whose hair is uncovered. And you all have to ask yourself, what is she doing? Now, of course, you can miss this. That's okay. Just shows you still need me. Or you can think that I'm exaggerating. I'm not. And you'll all admit it very, very quickly. Because you say, just because she's uncovering her hair, what does it have to do with Sota? And I'll say again, everything. She now says, well, everybody's holy, and she's right. And they're not. These people are so holy that they're going to reject Moshe Rabbeinu, but they don't want to look at a married woman's hair. Okay? Because they're from. Now, if we move a little bit further down in the same Midrash, which is very interesting because all of this is also sun and moon oriented. We're going back to where arguments come from, and they know the arguments. They know how to do the sun and the moon part. They put the sota whammy on Moshe. They said, they accused Moshe of being with married women. As it says, Shenemar, Vayikan'u l'Moshe b'machaneh. Amar Shmur, Bar Yitzchak, Amar Rav, Melamit shekol echad kineh le'ishto mi'Moshe. Now, first of all, this is the most preposterous thing in the history of the world. It doesn't get crazier than this. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu, these people are willing to use every single excuse to take him down. The source that it's quoting is in 18. It's Pasuk Tehillim, which is Perek Kufav, which deals with the various rebellions in the desert. Vayikna'u l'Moshe b'machaneh, which either meant that they were jealous of Moshe, la'aron kodesh Hashem, but it's fascinating, the Medrash, and we'll see in a second, the Gemara, actually read it as they warned their wives against Moshe. It's also in source 19 in the Gemara. And it's the exact same as what we just now read, except for the end, which continues. Amar Shmuel Yitzchak Milam Shekol Echad Vechad Kineh Ishto Mimoshe Shene Emar Umoshe Yikach Et Oel V'Natal Lo Michutz L'Machaneh. The Moshe took the Oel and he left the Machaneh. Why did he left the Machaneh? Because he didn't want to entangle any woman in a halachic quagmire, and therefore he has to leave the Machaneh. He wasn't going to get anybody in trouble. Where's this pasuk from? It's source 20. Which is Perek Lamed Gimel, which is immediately after the Chet Egel. Umoshi kachet ol talo michutz l'machaneh. Which means, what happened over here? That the people, after the Chet Egel, turn to their wives and say, Moshe has it's not normal, the control he has over you. Which means Aaron went into his delay tactics and he told everybody that all the women that should, go get the earrings from your women. And the women refused to bring the earrings. So the people, what's their conclusion? It all comes down to sex, and Moshe must be having sex with them. Why else would they not be giving their earrings for an egel? I hope you realize the absurdity of the logic in all of this, But that's the context that the Gemara just now said. That means that these people had too much of a connection to Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore they warned their wives, because why are their wives believing in Moshe and not listening to them? That's the context that all of this comes in. Now, why did this help us? So let's go back. Matan Torah, and I'm not going to try to prove this right now. Matan Torah is called a wedding, right? Har Sinai is the wedding between Am Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What happens by this wedding? We end up cheating on HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the Egel, and therefore you have the Me'ila, which means the Egel is the place of the Me'ila. What does Moshe Rabbeinu do with the Egel afterwards? He takes it and he melts it down and takes it with water and gives them all to drink. What does he do? It's the process of Sota. Which means, and by the way, what do? They all then take off the crowns on their hair and they undo the things on their heads, which is really undoing their hair, which means all of these elements now are staring at you when you now consider the elements of Matan Torah. So now let's stop again. We noted before that we had this outlier, namely to bring a korban from barley. There's another korban from barley, and that is the Omer. So now we move over and we start thinking about this whole thing all over again. We're told, preparing for Chag HaShavuot subsequently in other years, Ki Tavoa La'aretz, right, you're going to go and you're going to bring the Korban Omer, right, which goes Yetzahara and the Chametz and so on, and then you bring the Korban Omer, which is barley, which is animal feed, which is instinct, and then we count the days moving over to Chag HaShavuot when we bring the Bikurim, which now should be a tikkun for that very first sin that took place, the first Me'ilah which took place, and again, we're also trying to fix the subsequent Me'ilah which takes place when we cheat on God with the Chet HaEgel, and then we end up bringing the Shtei HaLechem as well. And at this point, we try to fix all of these various elements. Now, I want to pause again just to realize what it is that I just now tried to do. Where did we start? We started in Parshat Naso. And we looked at various laws, namely Me'ila and Sota and Nazir and Birchat Kohanim. We then added another one, and that was the offering, which is done on the day of the consecration of the Mishkan. And we try to understand the connection between these things. All of these are these vertical relationships with the Kaddish Baruch Hu to bring down holiness. It's all about holiness. It is the me'ila, the inappropriate holiness, or taking of something which isn't yours. The sota now is finessed in the same way. We have the nazir trying to achieve more holiness, but the real kohen is the one who brings down the bracha from Shamayim, and then we moved over to Nachshon. We realize that the events on this day is the same day as we had in Parshat Shmini. And in Parshat Shmini, we have Aaron becoming Kohen, which is really what the issue is about. While those can raise questions, does he really deserve to become Kohen because of the Chet HaEgel, which now we realize how we got back over there. At the same time, the Birkat Kohanim is in both of these places, both where Aaron lifts up his hands and over here as well. We're told what you do when the Kohen is going to bless the people. The idea of drinking wine, which in one place is about the Nazir, and the other place was introduced in terms of the Kohen, and not drinking wine while doing the Avodah, is mentioned. And as I said, the various connections are numerous. We went back and to look for the core of jealousy. We stopped by the sun and the moon, and we also made this interesting stop looking at the very formation or creation of Adam, and realized there's a lot of the Sota process within that very creation, including, especially according to the Targum Yonatan, where we have the water and we have the earth from the Beit HaMikdash specifically, together with the spirit or the breath of God creating man, which, as I said, is really quite similar. We then have the sin that takes place in the Garden of Eden, the jealousy of the Nachash on the one hand, and on the other hand, we have the Me'ilah that takes place. According to those Midrashim that say that the Nachash actually, as it were, slept with Eve, we have the Me'ilah on the other level, but at least it's the jealousy in that area, which now the whole core of the Sota issue is taking place over there. This then moves over to this child who then is born, and the child then who's born. And of course, along the way, we also have the Nachash who has to eat from the earth. Now, this child who is born is going to fix things. He's going to create this fixed relationship. He then goes and does something religiously dramatic, and he brings a korban, but he doesn't bring the choices, doesn't bring the best, doesn't bring the first. And on the other hand, Hevel does, and he turns and kills Hevel. The earth opens up its mouth and swallows the blood of Hevel. So everything at this point was in place for the other places of jealousy, but the Midrash told us a couple of more things along the way. The question is, who's going to be a Kohen? We're told the duration over here, that this takes place on Chag HaShavuot, that it's the Bikurim. He should have brought the Bikurim. He doesn't bring the Bikurim, which means not bringing the Bikurim, the Midrash is actually jumping on and saying, that's the significant point over here. On the other hand, we then find this other echo of all of this between Moshe, who feels a sense of unity, like we said, he feels a sense of unity with his brothers. He then kills the Egyptian who's trying to kill the Jew, but then we saw the subtext. All of that was again the story of a Sota-like of situation, which should be interesting. And then, of course, and then over here we have this other element being used, the Shem Hashem being used in terms of Moshe using the Shem Hashem and later on the Makalu using it. But we also saw the Shem Hashem being introduced in terms of the Birkat Kohanim, where God says to Cain, you could become a Kohen, so you could still give the bracha, you could, and uses the exact phrase used by the Birkat Kohanim. We finally got to the story of Korach, Datan, Avir, and On, and then we see, hold it, that the earth opening up its mouth, we went back to the Cain story. We see afterwards the 250 people being killed, we're right back again to the Nadav and Avihu story, the bringing the Ketoret in an inappropriate way, and finally we got to On, and we realized that the Sota was staring at us there when she uncovers her hair, and is there by the doorway. But a lot of these elements then come actually go back to Har Sinai itself, which should be important to us. And we noted that impossible Midrash and Gemara, where it tells that people were jealous of Moshe, or they actually warned their wives not to be near Moshe because Moshe was suspected of the worst possible sins, which is absolutely, you know, perplexing, but we understand why it was, because the women didn't give the gold for the golden calf, which took us back to the golden calf. After the golden calf of Moshe treated the people like a Sota, and therefore they had to uncover themselves. They lost the Edim, they uncovered their hair as it was, and they also drink from the gold, from the itself. They drink from the eagle together with water, which sounds very much like the whole process of Sota. Later on, we find that just like the Sota brings the Omer, a korban from barley, now we're going to have the Korban Omer, which will be brought subsequently from barley, which will complete the process of the healing. And then Am Yisrael, when they finally get to Chag HaShavuot, hopefully we will no longer have jealousy. We will be like Ish Echad B'Lev Echad. We will bring the Bikurim, and we will have this sense of appreciation for God and everything that He's done, and hopefully we'll no longer be guilty of Me'ilah. There, I did the whole thing in 90 seconds.